Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Pastor, when you go to a church, whether it be a new church or perhaps it's not so much that you're going to a new church, but you're already involved in a new church and you're involved in revitalizing and replanting a church, there's already a structure in place in most instances, and that structure perhaps may have been there for years. Today, we're going to talk about something that we all can do that will improve the structure of our ministry. This is Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. There's Mark Clifton. There's Mark Halleck.
Hey.
I'm Dan Hurst. We have Kyle Bierman sitting over here on the couch just going, hey, guys, what's for lunch?
That's right.
And so, but we'll get to that later. But today, when I talk about a structure, generally when you talk about the structure of a church, we'll talk about, well, you know, you got your board of deacons and you have your, in some cases, you have trustees and, you know, you have your finance committee. And all, we think of that as the structure. But actually, the structure is the components for ministry. Mm-hmm. And one of the key components for ministry in a church is what we used to call Sunday school.
And we still do.
And now we'll use different terms because, yeah, you know, yeah, we're modern, you but, know. So yeah, so we'll use terms like life groups or, you know.
Yeah, you know, I was filling in at a church that needs to be replanted, and it's an old First Baptist church, and so worship was over, and they have they have worship and then Sunday school and then worship, right? So two worship services. So worship was over, and this older lady was leaving with her friend, and I was behind them, and I heard him. She said, "You ready to go to our Sunday school class?" And the older lady goes, "We can't call it Sunday school anymore. It's life group now."
I know.
It's like, yeah, you know, yeah, a rose by any other name, right? Let these people call it Sunday school.
Yeah, exactly.
You've taken enough away from them. So what we're going to do today, Hurst, is we're going to look at some... Well, Flake's formula. All right?
What
you ever hear
that?
Flake's formula?
Yeah, only from a barber.
No, Flake's formula. That's what you do to your frosted flakes.
Oh, okay.
Actually, if you want to have, if you really want to, if you got a weight loss or you need some fiber in your diet.
Oh, man.
Huh?
What? You know, why are you looking at me when you say
you
that?
You and I are so old, we could go on tour. We'd be the Earth, Wind, and Fiber tour. Anyway, Flake's formula is an old Sunday school formula for Sunday school was started not as primarily as a Bible study entity, but as an outreach entity.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could get people to join your Sunday school class who are not members of your church and not even Christians. You got to say, "I'd like you to come to our Sunday school class." And anyway, that's another story of another day. Okay, Mr. Kyle Bierman over here on microphone number 8.
Yeah, that's right.
I see microphone number 8. Yeah. That light is on. That's from the old Southern Baptist Convention meeting. Kyle, why don't you read to us the ancient Flake's formula? These came from the Baptist Sunday School Board years ago.
Okay.
And this is how you develop a strong Sunday school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Go for it, buddy.
And so these are probably 100 years old, but they're still good. So step one, know your possibilities, right? Know the people in your neighborhood. Know where some of the gaps are in what's, you know, people that are being served in your community. Know what's out there. Step two, enlarge the organization. And so this is basically where you sit down and you figure out the groups that you have versus the groups that you need. And like, so in order to reach the community, what do we need to provide here, right? What's the space? Number three, enlist and train workers. If you're going to have classes, you need teachers. Step four, provide the space. Give them a place to meet. And then step five, go after the people.
That's it. And you know what? For decades, that worked really well. Mm. And there are still some basic truths about Sunday school that will work whether you have traditional Sunday school or small groups or life groups or whatever you want to call it, whether they're Thursday nights in homes or Sunday mornings in your worship, before your worship. So let's take a look, brothers, today at some of the, this is from Chuck Lawless, 10 small group lessons that we can learn from old-fashioned Sunday school. And by the way, just to tease you out there, coming up, if the Lord does not return, coming up in a future podcast, we're going to do one on maybe we should go back to Sunday school. Maybe this experiment with, you know, Thursday night small groups, maybe we go back. Things always go back around.
Yeah.
Now, we got churches now that are going back to traditional Sunday school. So I'll just tease you with that a little bit. Uh-huh. We're going to do that. Okay, here we go. Mr. Halleck.
Yep. Okay, ready? Number one, the small group's purpose or the Sunday school class's purpose must be clear. Must be clear. So he says this, frankly, even Sunday school has often lost its original historical purpose, right? Evangelistic outreach. We're going to talk about that. But a small group program works best when its purpose is most obvious and best known. And I think that's like with so many things. Small groups became the thing, I think, I mean, I'm younger than you guys, but I know like in the 90s, in the church growth movement, like it was like this crazy, cool, innovative idea. Like, what if we met in groups in homes and shared a meal and did sermon-based discussion? And it's like, man, this is different, getting out of the church building or whatever. And I think a lot of churches did it really well, and I think a lot of churches still do. But what happened was every church was like, well, that's the answer. Mm-hmm. So instead of really owning it, instead of actually believing in it, they try to kind of copy and paste. And what happened is they killed what was maybe going well in terms of Sunday school. And this small group ministry, whatever, just was lame and ineffective. And now you've cut off your whole discipleship strategy in many ways.
And not well-defined.
And not well-defined, I mean, not clear. What are we doing?
Why are we here? What's the purpose? Yep. You know, what's the long-term strategy of a small group? How we develop, you know, I just really think, otherwise it just sort of becomes its own thing and it can get way off course. So you whether it's a Sunday school class or a small group class, the purpose has to be well-defined. Why are we doing this?
When I'm working with churches in particular and doing some work with their Sunday school strategy or their Bible study strategy or whatever they want to call it, life group strategy, one of the very first things, and it's amazing, it happens every time I do this, when I'm in one of these sessions and I ask them, tell me the mission statement of your class. Crickets, just like that, you know, just like that. They go, mission statement.
Yeah.
Every class should have a mission statement. Why does this class exist?
Why are we here?
What are we all about? Why are we meeting in this particular, what is it that we want to accomplish? What does God want to accomplish in this particular class? If we are ordained by God, then we should have a mission statement. So what's the mission statement of that particular class?
So we'll know if we're actually accomplishing what God's called us to do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Number two, intentional organization matters. Whether you're in a small group or Sunday school class, there needs to be some organization.
That's
for example, ready? In a good Sunday school class, you need workers. You need a teacher. You need someone to back up that teacher or to help teach or to be there when that teacher, an assistant teacher, someone you're training to be a teacher later on.
Yep.
So you have a teacher and an assistant teacher. You need to have someone that's an outreach leader, someone that's a prayer leader, maybe someone that's a fellowship leader, someone that's a care group leader. You go, what do you mean? Because you're in. Or if you don't organize for these things, they won't be taking place.
Well, dude, and here's the other thing, and I'm so glad this point's in there because I love this. This is what. One of the things is this, part of a small group ministry is you got to get people to actually come, okay? People will come when they know they have a role. So a lot of this is, look, if you want to start a small group and you want to assure that you got 10 to 15 regularly there, well, then create a role for them.
Yeah.
If there's just one role, well, there's the small group leader and then just come and be part of it. Well, you might get the faithful for a while, but they won't be consistent.
12 weeks.
You got to get people
12
in
weeks,
the,
you're dead.
Get them in the game, and then they'll be even more pumped about it.
And, you know, one thing that's missing from our list here is every class ought to have a class administrator. Somebody who handles the little details, like, oh, you know, we need to have prayer cards.
Or the food, or those kinds of things. Right. We're going to eat, who's going to, and even the schedules, and make sure if it moves from home to home, who's taking care of that. You're right. That's something the teacher shouldn't have to do. There should be a class. And someone might have a gift of kind of organization and not really be a teacher, and that gives them a reason to. Okay, number three, these workers, though, these volunteers need to be trained.
Oh, constantly.
It's one thing to say, would you be the class administrator? It's another thing not to tell them what to do.
Right.
Or would you be the class prayer leader and not tell them what to do? So one of the reasons back in the day Sunday school worked so well, ladies and gentlemen, as an old man, I will tell you this, is the training of leaders was absolutely front and center. If we could go back in time to 1949 and you would be at any major Southern Baptist conference, one of the main things would be taking place. You'd be training your Sunday school leaders.
Sure.
And every Wednesday night for decades, churches would have Sunday school leadership training. And every association had leadership training, and every summer the state conventions would do different leadership training. The whole idea was, if we're going to have a successful Sunday school, we got to train our leaders.
Yep.
I think many times, as you said, small groups seem like an easy, quick answer for something new, and we do not spend the time training small group leaders that we used to spend training Sunday school leaders. And we don't spend the time today training Sunday school leaders we used to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost mandatory back when Sunday school was really functioning well. You had weekly Sunday school leadership training on Wednesday night. Wow. Weekly.
Now, let me say something about that. Wow. What happened is it evolved into just teaching the teachers to teach.
That's right.
And that's where it failed.
That's right.
You know, because it was again dealing with the structure. Don't let your Sunday school teacher of a particular class be responsible for teaching or training his own leaders within the class.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to come along beside them and help them develop their administrators, develop their fellowship leaders, develop their outreach people from their class. They don't know what to do.
That's right.
You've got to help them.
Again, one of the reasons Sunday school was such an effective outreach song for so many years was the emphasis on training of the leaders and equipping those leaders and ongoing. That was really important.
Ongoing. That's
number
huge.
Five. Yeah. Pastoral care must be organized in those small groups. You can't just let it happen haphazardly. You want to talk about that even in your work?
Yeah, we have a team, and we call them teams. We don't call them committees or groups even. We call them teams. It just has a cohesiveness to it. And we call it our shepherding team. And I have material for them to use that they are expected to do. Their job as part of the shepherding team, and they have to have a sense of calling to that. I don't just go and ask, say, "Hey, would you be a part of our shepherding team?" I tell my people, we're looking for people who feel called to be a part of this, and your role will be. And I explain what the shepherd does, and the shepherd is basically pastoral care at the layman's level, and they kind of serve as an intermediary as they're working with people in the class who may need more pastoral care than they can provide or that shepherding care that they can provide. They know to either come to me or to come to one of our pastors and say, this is the situation here. Yeah. What can we do? So their role actually goes beyond just the class. Now they're involving people that in the class that have connection. They have a family member that's really struggling or a neighbor that's really struggling. It's our way. It's in a way, it's a way of outreach. Pastoral care becomes a ministry of outreach.
Yeah.
It just naturally evolves that way. But your team has to be sensitive to the fact that they have a specific role, and it's not just to check on somebody with a phone tree and say, how are you doing today?
Oh, that's so true. Thank you.
That's good, man.
Okay, number
good.
Six. Man, we got to realize we're here to reproduce this class.
Mm.
And I think I like what Lala says. 12 to 15 regular attenders is pretty much max for a normal small group or a normal Sunday school class. And so you want to, as Flake's formula said, you create new classes. You create new units.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been doing the good work of giving all these folks a job, you get a care person or the administrator or the assistant teacher or whatever, you'll see in them some real leadership ability. And you're training up the next leader to take another class.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't just out of the blue go, we need another class, who wants to teach it? You can see who's really engaged. So training up leaders and giving them many responsibilities, different people responsibilities, helps you. It's like a minor league in baseball. We can see who, and then when you're ready to move, you can say, we need to start a new group. And it's not like, we're going to start a new group. No, from the very beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
our
part of
purpose,
the vision. Yeah.
The vision is to reproduce ourselves.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the vision. Otherwise, we don't want to divide our class.
Yeah, right.
And if you go to most churches now, especially declining churches, even if the Sunday school started growing, those people don't want to change their class. This is my teacher. This is my classroom.
Yeah,
that's never how it was supposed to be.
No.
Right.
So you got to be up multiplying.
James Crane was a missionary in Mexico, and he had what he called the ministry of multiplication. And every church was planted to plant churches.
Mm-hmm.
And from the very onset, that was the idea. Your goal is not to be just to be an entity that becomes its own self-sufficient. Item out here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your goal is to multiply. And so there was a drive, a constant drive. What are we doing? How can we plant? And the same thing should be true for Sunday school
class. And that was always the case, even in Flake's formula, even back in the day. It wasn't like, okay, now we've got our classes, we're set. It's like, how can we create more classes?
That's so important. I never even heard this, by the way.
Really?
I've never even heard this.
Yeah.
I'm going, everything you're saying, I have never seen in Sunday school.
No, I know
And I'm all in with this Flake guy.
I know.
I mean, dude, this is the way to do Sunday school.
I know.
But that's a huge thing. I mean, that's why it becomes so stagnant.
Yeah.
There's no vision for multiplication, which comes with raising up leaders.
Right.
I mean, it's great. I totally agree.
Yeah. Sunday school was specifically an outreach arm to do two things. To reach the unchurched and to train up your own leaders and create new units. And the more new units you created, and in Sunday school, by the way, that's a whole nother deal, but you wanted your Sunday school enrollment to be twice as large as your attendance.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they're not, you enroll people in Sunday school who are not believers. You don't have to be a believer. You're just in a class. You're just
Then your worship attendance. What you're saying?
No. Not worship attendance. Let's say you have a Sunday school class you got 12, 14 people there.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have 30 members because the deal is that ideally, now this isn't the case anymore, but ideally a lot of those, what we would do actually, Mark, is we would go, back in the day, you would go door to door and you would say, hi, my name is Mark Halleck. I'm down here at First Baptist Church. I teach a Sunday school class for adult men, and my wife teaches one for women, and we have one for children, and we'd like to enroll you in that class. And I go, we don't want members of your church. You don't have to be a member of our church. We just want to enroll you in our class. It's a study on this, and would you? And you know what? You go ahead and enroll them. And back in the day, you would enroll them, and then they would be a member of your class.
That is wild.
And they may not come every week. You know, but you're going to stay up with them. And so the idea was, if you had the more members you had, then the more opportunity you had to reach those people. It was a very different kind of deal.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
I got you.
Now, our goal is 50% of our class is unchurched, essentially.
Okay.
So it doesn't work out to be 50%. It works out to about a third.
Yeah.
So basically every Sunday, about a third of the people in class are not members of the church. Wow. Now, our goal is to lead them in that direction.
Right. Okay.
And part of the goal of the class also is for people to leave to another, go to another class,
Do something else,
to get involved in another ministry. But it just works out that about a third of them are not members of the church.
And we're going to do one on Sunday school, so I don't want to get too lost in this.
Yeah.
But none of that really. Most churches don't do that anymore.
Yeah,
but that was how it was begun.
Yeah, back in the day.
And the idea was used to have a percentage, and I don't have it in front of me, but the percentage likelihood that someone would become a believer in Christ and a member of your church went up exponentially if they were first a member of a Sunday school class.
Okay.
So it was kind of
a funnel.
It was a funnel.
Yeah.
And people would say, well, you know, I'm not a Baptist. No, this class is open to everybody.
Yeah.
And also back in the day, we would say, we have a class for everybody in your family. There's a class for little Billy. There's a class for Junior. There's a class for mom and dad. Yeah. We got a class for everybody. And once you're signed up in the class, then you have people who would follow up with you. And maybe even if they're not members of your church, they could still help organize the class. They could help bring some food to the class.
Yeah.
It's that kind of
thing.
Gotcha. Now, when you're talking about small groups in homes, that's not that unusual. People would always say, you would want unchurched people to be a member of your small group.
That's right.
Well, same thing. You want unchurched people to be a member of your Sunday school class. Although today, people don't really understand that. Why would we have?
Okay, that's another thing.
All right. Now, the other thing, space matters. You've got to have adequate space. And the old 80% rule.
Yeah.
If the room you're in is 80% full, and that's true for the home. If you've got someone that has a relatively small home and you're trying to cram 15 or 18 people in there and only 10 is comfortable, so you got to be aware of space.
It's amazing how that works. It's frustrating.
Right.
Because you get in a class that you think, wow, it's full. This is great. We're growing. No, you're not.
No.
Yeah.
You know? People like a little space. They like to feel like I'm not crammed in, and if they show up and you got to bring in some extra chairs, new people especially feel like, oh, I'm kind of imposing here. I don't really belong here.
Yeah.
There's not room for me here.
Right,
but if you've already instilled that pattern that you're going to multiply, that your whole goal is to start another class or to expand, then you know when you reach that 80% mark that your next step is, all right, we're going to funnel and start another class or, you know, something similar.
So for Sunday school and for small groups, really the focus has to still be on the unreached and the lost. Otherwise, it turns inward. And brothers and sisters, that's what happened to most of our Sunday school classes.
Right.
They've totally turned inward. They're not about the lost at all. But you need to be focused on the lost in two ways. First of all, hopefully realize there's some people in your Sunday school class who are lost, and they don't know Elijah from Ezekiel. And so you can't just assume in your teaching that they know anything. And secondly, focused on the lost, and that's who you're trying to reach. You're not just trying to be a little group for each other. You're trying to reach the lost. Next, he says, the Bible has to be your textbook. And, you know, whether you use some other curriculum or whatever, it's always centered around the Bible. And just do a little commercial here. Lifeway's new material that's been out for a number of years now called The Gospel Project is great because it's
awesome.
It's centered on the Bible.
Yeah.
It goes through the Bible every 5 years. The Bible has to be central to this. And you might think, well, that seems normal. No.
It's not.
It's not. No. People will, you'd be surprised, left to their own devices, what small group leaders or Sunday school leaders would teach.
Oh, man.
Am I right, Mark?
It's true, man. It's so true.
And lastly, children matter. And you've got a plan for kids. If it's a small group, what are we going to do with our... You're not going to get young families with kids to come to a small group if you don't have some kind of strategy for their children. And the same thing in Sunday school, children matter. And I'll quit with this, but you used to have something called the cradle roll, Mark. The cradle roll was where you'd enroll babies and infants and new babies in this. They had their own class. It was the cradle roll.
Wow.
And actually you would go out and you would, when you found out someone in your neighborhood was going to have a baby, you would go out and you'd say, we'd like to enroll this baby at our, what's our cradle roll? The idea was that you give them a place. And I think it was, a lot of people have said it, but I think Criswell said it. You know, he'd like to go down in the nursery, Brother David Criswell, look at all the 1, 2, and 3-year-olds, because he knew they didn't come by themselves. For every 1, 2, and 3-year-old in the nursery, there was an adult somewhere in that building, you know. So if you love and care for children, then you'll, and we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
So these are 10 things that Lawless really gives us that are great insights for Sunday school or for small groups. You may want to share this with your Sunday school leaders, with your small group leaders, both this podcast and the article.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.